Well, Ken Phillips, we are on OPA number 77 this very week. And my name is Kevin DeFrango. How are you feeling about the nice uneven number of crooked sevens? I didn't even think about it. That was a great reason to get the Beltane beer of the week, actually. Because I got Rogue 7. Which has seven different types of hops, is 7.77% alcohol, and is 77 IBUs.
It's almost as though you planned this beer selection with our episode tonight, Kevin.
You know what? Sadly enough, I did not, but I do like the numbers. I don't like very many odd numbers.
Yeah, you could have at least pretended to... have planned it. I would not have called you out for it. I had no idea. I think would have made for a better show. And
yep, I planned it.
Okay, there we go. Great. We'll edit that first part out. No one will hear that.
we'll go back and record this again. We'll start from the beginning.
That sounds good. But yeah, I don't know. Anything new going on since we recorded last time?
Well, if we're gonna stay in the beer department for a momentary, bottled the recent what? Oh, well, I'm still calling it. It's gonna be one of the few beers I do not change to a wrestling name. Pop Pop's Pumpkin Patch Porter is staying is the name.
Now, someone could, I suppose, come along, a wrestler could come along and just adopt Papa's Pumpkin Patch as their finishing move.
If they did that, it would be a great day.
That would be pretty amazing. I don't know if there's any young up-and-coming wrestlers out there listening.
Or maybe call it the Pumpkin Patch Pop. Like, you know, at least modify it a little bit to make it sound like it has a little pop.
Well, I don't know. That's going to make it harder to really tie in the wrestling thing with the beer, so.
Oh, that is true. It's screwing up marketing a little bit.
You got to think the big picture here.
Well, it's just like the one set of wrestlers actually named a finisher of theirs. About a one of the wrestling news reporters. It's called the Meltzer Driver, and the reporter is Dave Meltzer. He's like one of the biggest, if not the biggest, wrestling reporter around. So, you know, it would be similar to that.
So a Meltzer Driver is like a name of a actual wrestling move now?
Yes. I mean, the Young Bucks are the team in question, and they named it after him.
Okay. Well, you know,
I forget if they were trying to get him over, like trying to make sure he liked them, or if he already liked them, so they named him move after him. It was something like that.
Wow. So I guess that could be something that's not completely outside the realm of possibility then, with the you know, one might even think it's an inevitability that eventually someone is going to name their wrestling move the
after one
pop, pop pumpkin patch. Was that what it was called?
Yes, pop pop's pumpkin patch porter.
Yeah, I think so.
There's a lot of peas in there. It's a tongue twister, actually.
Pop pop. I think someone could deliver it with the right
pop pop.
Yeah,
like just like Mick Foley would come out and do the bang bang.
Yes,
but you come out pop pop.
That's well, I mean, we could only hope that you know, Mick Foley would come out of retirement and just basically to name this move. That would be pretty amazing.
He would not need to come out of retirement since he's well, I guess if he needed to do the move, I suppose he would need to come out of retirement. I mean, he is on TV right now, I guess, was what I was thinking.
Oh, okay. Well, then maybe all right. Well, then I guess he wouldn't really even need to do the move as long as he's willing to heavily promote it. during his television show. I think that's certainly doable.
Interesting thing about the beer. First beer, I plop some vanilla into. I feel like I like the vanilla in the porter. It was
talking vanilla beans here?
Yeah, I cut one Madagascar vanilla bean in half and put a half in two different 1 gallon containers.
So that's half a bean per gallon.
Yes.
I see. Now, how big is a vanilla bean, just for someone who might not
know? About 6 to 8 inches.
Well, that's pretty big for a bean.
Yeah, it's pretty long, narrow. All of the, like, the main stuff is, like, inside of the shell itself.
Sure.
And it is not cheap to buy vanilla bean either. I'm just throwing that one out there.
Well, I guess you've got to get the shipping from Madagascar figured in there somehow. That's
because we got
something.
It,
I'm sure
we got this stuff. We like to go to this one spice shop called Penzi's. So we went there, and
that was our spice shop shout out of the week.
Yeah, I was like, well, fuck it. I may as well. we're talking about it enough. I may as well mention it. But
so that's where you go to get all of your vanilla bean.
Well, yeah, that's where I will be going in the future for any vanilla bean purposes. Now, I do think that I'd also like to try to brew the oatmeal milk stout again, and I think that's another one that would benefit from being flavored with vanilla.
Yeah, I think milk and vanilla go together pretty well. I think you're onto something there.
So that's another a future endeavor for Stunt Granny Brewing is doing that.
Speaking of future endeavors, well, I guess we usually like to cover.
I think you're gonna get a fail for that one.
Oh, did I stumble there? Yeah. No, I think we'd like to cover future endeavors quite a lot on this this show here, Kevin.
Yeah, there you go.
That's kind of a theme of ours. Things to kind of bring the future to the present, if you will, in some way, closing the loop between the things that seem so far off at one point, but now actually seem to be happening. And I don't know if this necessarily falls into that category even. But
yeah, because they did mention that this parade took place in September of last year.
Right. So
this really isn't a right now story, but I guess it still fits in with some other topics that that we're talking about too.
Well, I guess I'm out of the loop, so maybe this is old news for people. But and apparently too, when I showed this to my wife, she was actually really upset for some reason, because she felt like they were everybody had already seen this kind of design. But maybe I'm a little slow on the uptake. But
well, it was interesting within this article that they did look into the U.S. military looked into it as early as the 70s.
This type of camouflage.
Yeah, it looks like a pixelated, you know, camouflage. Instead of being in amorphous shapes, you know, just like rounded edges and flowing with different colors, this just has splotches of areas that are in squares. And they said that it does actually consistently work better as camouflage out in, you know, the environment that it's supposed to be in.
Right. I mean, it looks like pixels, like if you took a picture and just like blew it up till it was way too big and just kind of looked at a little splotch of the picture that was super pixelated, so you could see all the little squares.
Oh.
But it, or as they say, the game, the computer game Minecraft, which is, I would say it definitely reminds me of in terms of the general look. And I think the first time I saw it, I might have thought that it was like some kind of a printing error or something, because it doesn't seem like the what you would think of as the traditional camouflage. You know, I don't know.
Oh.
You remember those, some of the action movies where the guys would like paint their face with like camouflage or
well, yeah, there. Oh no, I was gonna say Arnold Schwarzenegger in Predator, but he just puts mud on his face.
I think he could put mud on his whole body to try to defeat the Predator's heat sinking
abilities.
Yeah.
Yeah.
With the cool mud.
Although I do feel like he, someone might have worn a little bit of face paint.
Well,
like, I feel like he had some.
There was an Indian or Native American.
Was it Commando that he was in where he had the green and black face paint?
You might be right about that one.
I don't think he does it in Predator. I think he does it in Commando.
Okay. Now I'm trying to remember, because I think I remember that final scene where he's like single-handedly taking on an armed fortress. I think he was wearing some kind of a face, which it was really strange because I don't think he was wearing a shirt in that scene. So I'm not sure how really serious he was about camouflage in that movie, Kevin, now that I think back on it. It's almost all just for show or something, for spectacle. I don't understand.
No, really? Something from Hollywood was for spectacle? That's what I did enjoy, and this is a topic I didn't share with you, but I remember reading about it. It was some ex-military guy who advised on movie sets now as his job, and he was in special forces. He's like, he was listing things unrealistic about movies, and he's like, there's no one guy that's gonna take out six people.
Mm-hmm.
like in a movie. I was like, do people really like that's one that I'm just like, does this need to be said out loud?
I think it does. I think people can really get, hooked into that kind of hero idea, I think. So it's probably not bad to actually mention it once in a while. Because it is a pretty prevalent theme, I think, in a lot of these entertainments.
Oh, yeah. And pretty much all of them, honestly. Yes. Like, I mean, I love, and I have mentioned my love of Hawaii Five-0. It's completely off the rails, and they have stuff like that happen left and right. Like, I mean, almost in every episode, they take out multiple hostiles with one person's gunfire.
Yeah, it makes for good, something to watch on the screen, but yeah.
Yeah, not really realistic in any way, shape, or form. But again, to go back to the camouflage.
See, at first, to me, that does not look realistic. It looks like some kind of printing error, like I said. It seems like, why would something that's supposed to blend in with the natural environment not, or look like so much like it came off of an old dot matrix printer or something?
Well, it was kind of funny that they did have, in the article link, they have a before and after, where they show like an old style tank and a new style tank. And to be honest with you, I looked at both of them going, what motherfucker can't see that? Like, that's my response. And then it was funny because just a paragraph after it, it's just like, oh, there's some people that are just going to say they don't understand why we're doing this anyway. And I'm just like, okay, maybe I'm the idiot here. Like, I haven't gone to war. Maybe this stuff looks different when you're in combat. And it, although it also kind of pulls in another point that was in the article too, though, is that they mentioned that the dot matrix style was better at both short and long range.
Yeah.
While the different types of patterns that they have used previously, some of them are better for up close and some of them are better for far away.
Yeah, I would think of, you know, it kind of makes sense because then you when you're doing the patterns, there is some kind of a level of detail, I guess, that you're adding on there that tells you like whether you're seeing something that is like, if it's something nearby, you might want to have more detail in your pattern to be able to make it look like, you know, a lot of leaves or something up close.
Right.
Or, you know, I'm just trying to imagine what they're saying, but I think then it is interesting though, that it actually isn't just because it's easier to print out or, it actually does make things, and it actually is easier to print out, it seems like.
Yeah, I would think so. I mean, the shape of the tank just in and of itself kind of lends itself to a more square pattern.
Yeah, and to be able to blend in more, like you say, with distant objects versus up-close objects. And I think the ones we were looking at had kind of different like levels of dark and light to kind of blend in with if there's like, now the interesting thing was these blue camouflage tanks here.
Yeah, that I think they kind of took like the worst picture because the ones linked within the article, oh, they have like a normal, I'm sorry, they did have a normal looking camouflage set of colors. Which to me would be the traditional green, brown, black, alternate green. I don't know what you want to call that. You know, the, I mean,
light
there's
and dark green, maybe?
Yeah, light and a dark green, and then beige. You know, those to me are traditional colors that you see in camouflage. And I mean, the blue one looks kind of out of place. This one doesn't. Just because the colors are familiar, I think it kind of helps. And I feel like every time I've seen the headline, I've seen the blue ones. Because it you know, visually it stands out more than this. Like, this kind of almost looks like a regular tank. Or, whatever that is. It's probably not actually a tank. That's price. It has
carrier there, maybe.
Yeah, because it looks like it has rocket launchers on the back. I'm sure I'm saying the wrong name, and it doesn't really caption it. So, yeah. Thanks for nothing, article.
Yeah, thanks, article. well, it's it is true that the blue definitely is more dramatic, but I think from what I could tell from the article that was a very kind of special purpose or special use sort of color. You might see like in an Arctic situation, or if it was going to be like an amphibious vehicle
situation. Yeah.
But
that makes sense that there would be some places to do that,
right? But not necessarily something you want to have in the forest. just saying.
Yeah, kind of like being the Redcoats during the American Revolution.
Yeah.
You kind of stick out when you're wearing red and you're in the forest.
You know, they might eventually be able to push a button and change colors of their tank or something like that, or go with some kind of a...
Oh, that was the cool part, too, that they didn't even mention that wasn't part of China's experiment there, but they were just saying how they're doing thermal imaging for some of them to help blend them in or make them look like smaller vehicles. Like, they make a tank look like a car, essentially, is what it does to the thermal imaging.
If they were being scanned with like a infrared viewer of some kind.
Correct. Yeah. That they're working on that technology, and that is crazy. Like, I mean, that we're getting like to that point. Like, when you're talking about that, you're seriously talking about an invisibility cloak is just like not that far away.
Well, I guess that is the other thing that we've kind of talked about on the show is that they've been at least trying to accomplish and having certain degrees of success. So it could eventually happen. I think we're still a little ways off from actually having it, though. The articles we've covered so far, I believe, have been kind of in more of the
preliminary stages.
Yeah, like I forget what you call it when you're putting out the first kind of plausible proof of concept is what I'm trying to say here.
Okay, yes. Gotcha. Yeah, I wasn't sure what you're aiming for.
Yeah, you know, thanks a lot, man.
Yeah, I'm sorry for leaving you hanging like that.
But, yeah, so it's a pretty cool idea. It makes you wonder, Kevin, how did people even come up with camouflage? I mean, where did that all even come from?
You know, that was kind of interesting. I was unawares because when you were talking to your wife about the possible articles here, I guess I was not aware that World War I was the first frequent use, I guess that you would say, of camouflage as a pattern. So that was definitely a factoid that I do not remember learning in school. I may have. So, I mean, it seems like a pretty basic one to throw out there, really, right?
Yeah, it does seem to make so much sense, and you kind of take it for granted that it must have been almost universal for all time or something, you know? But then if you do look at older uniforms, they're, you know, often very colorful and not really designed to be camouflaged.
Well, yeah, like it, just even in the past, well, even during like Roman times, their outfits weren't that, they were kind of garish. Even the Greeks were, and even when you talk about more kind of tribal groups, they you know, did a lot of face paint. Or even if you're talking about some, you know, people out on islands, they like to do the tattooing to help intimidate.
Or the Celtic people with painting their faces blue and, you know, the berserkers of legend.
Right.
So, yeah, there's, I think it used to be more about
sticking out,
looking, you know, intimidating, right?
Yeah. You need to do show your feathers.
And sometimes it's still about that a little bit, I guess, but it's not really the same. I mean, people did say, I guess, going back to our last topic, that China was kind of presenting all of these camouflage vehicles as a show of force and in a way doing maybe some of the same kind of stuff. But when they actually are going to be using these vehicles, they're going to want to keep them hidden and not necessarily put them out there to be seen.
Yeah, they're not going to march them out into the middle of Tiananmen Square.
And I think that had a lot to do with the change in kind of firepower capability was different in the First World War. Because then, it's a lot easier to attack, you know, once you see somebody. Like, you don't have to, like, hold back for any reason.
Yeah.
They're like mass producing these weapons and like machine guns and...
Yeah, that was the other thing I did kind of forget about, because that was like the trench warfare World War.
That's what it kind of ended up being bogged down, and maybe partly because people didn't know how to deal with these new weapons.
Yeah, other than get lots of people killed, they didn't know how to deal with how to solve the problem.
And one thing that they came up
with, plane technology still was it was obviously pretty impressive, really, just in a major feat kind of way, but
they used
still
it more
not...
for like reconnaissance than to actually attack with. You know, I think that the Red Baron actually was from World War I.
Okay.
This was kind of the beginning of dogfighting, I guess you'd say, was during this war.
Yes.
But
used to play that game all the time down at my grandmother's. It was a board game, and you were either the Red Baron or you were the U.S.
Interesting.
Yeah. I don't know where that game is. I wish we still had it.
But, yeah, they, so this was kind of an interesting article that we found, that we found here about, how they were kind of worked on perfecting the early camouflage. And,
yeah, there was a, like both of the wars, honestly, both of the world wars, a lot of women came into the workforce when the men were out fighting. And these women were hired as part of the camouflage guard.
They were explicitly looking for women who had a bit of an artistic streak, were good with their hands, and would be good at designing camouflage to conceal people.
And they did actually make them go through military training equal to that of the men, because there were women and men in this camouflage guard. Camouflage corps is what it was.
Yeah, now obviously they were not on the front lines during the war.
No, but it was pretty interesting. They were testing out camouflage patterns to be able to hide better. And they have these crazy pictures of them in like rock suits.
Yes. So it's like designed to look like rocks, basically. I don't know if it's made from some kind of like canvas or painted canvas or something like that.
Yeah, the article did not get into that part of the topic, which would have been pretty fascinating in and of itself. But this was plenty neat because you see them walking around with the outfits on, but then there are pictures at the end of the article where, I mean, I could guess maybe right if I knew the answer to where they were, but I mean, it is honestly hard to tell where they are in some of the pictures.
Yeah. And I mean, some of it might be the quality of the cameras that they had back then, that it's a little bit a little bit tougher to pick out some things, but
yeah,
it is
your camera phone or the camera on your phone is probably much better than
these were not shot with an iPhone, and that could be part of it, but I would say that yeah, it is true that I could not detect people in several of the photos that they showed here.
Yeah, so but I mean, it did sound like they did work, like you said, that they were good with their hands, so they did come up with stuff for the military outside of, you know. Oh, and they went to this park in New York, and people were scared because they wouldn't see them, and then the rocks would move. Or even, they had another one where people were dressed up as, like, a stump. Like a tree stump.
And I think this was, it seemed like people kind of had an idea of what they were doing, but it wasn't really, like, supposed to be, you know, broadcast. They were really working on, I guess, you know, military
secrets,
really. So people would have been somewhat surprised to see this stuff going on. I think it might have been the policeman at one point that they talked to who had seen some of this going on enough to realize what was happening, or
hey,
at least know that it was not, you know, anything unsavory going on. They were just actually doing work for the country. So
yeah. So yeah, I mean, it was pretty interesting. You know, that camouflage thing really, it's been around a good 100 years, I guess, now.
Yeah, just about 100 years exactly. Yeah. So
because this story starts in 1918, so yeah, that's pretty pretty interesting. to know that it's been around just that that short a time frame.
And I guess that it has. You wouldn't think it had changed that much, I guess, but now we're seeing a different. I guess it was just kind of, you know, the military can be resistant to change, but now we're seeing the new camouflage.
Yeah, and this was a pretty crazy. I always love seeing what people paid for stuff back in the day. And it was a $43 fee to get into the Corps. It was $25 for the uniform and $18 for tuition.
That probably was a good chunk of money back then.
Yeah, I'm sure it was.
With the way that inflation has gone. But, you know, it's a... It is kind of, but it's also strange, like, to think that you would pay to join the army. Like, do you still have to pay money to join?
Don't
they pay you?
Yeah, they pay you.
Times change, I guess. Well, there might have been. I think.
But I mean, this was reserve, so.
And I think there might have been the draft back then, so this could have been a way to potentially avoid. But if you're a woman, you wouldn't be drafted. I don't know.
Yeah. We are talking about the ladies here, Ken. Don't try to discredit them with your manness.
I know. I'm mansplaining all over the place here. But, yeah, speaking of, you know, I guess we're keeping it on the similar topics here this week. But to whip back to the future, as Doc Brown once said, did he ever say that, actually? Probably not. There is a certain United States Navy captain who is boldly going where no one has gone before.
Yes, it is. and it this does fit in because it is a stealth warship.
Yes, a Navy destroyer.
A Navy destroyer, and it is helmed by one Captain James A. Kirk. It is not James T. Kirk, ladies and gentlemen, but still, as would be obvious, this gentleman has gotten the whole Captain Kirk thing. He understands what's going on. At this point.
Well, the funniest thing that makes you think that someone has a sense of humor about this in the Navy high command somewhere is that...
He was even put in charge of this whatsoever?
First of all, that there's a Captain Kirk. I mean, but I could see that part. Then you consider that this is like a high-tech ship that actually looks something like a futuristic spaceship.
Yeah, they said it resembles the Starship Enterprise. Now, I'm not sure if there was a good picture. Oh, yeah.
Actually, if you go, there's the link to the ship's website. Yeah, in the article here, the USS Zumwalt. Was I trying to throw a W in there?
It is Zumwalt.
Zumwalt, yes. So I went to, there's a little video of it. But, it's a...
That doesn't look like a starship.
It's a flat, gray, and I guess that part of it is, pretty spaceship-like. Also, it doesn't have sort of the normal, like, little... You're used to seeing, like, little...
Guns
and, like, little things pointing up off of your ships. It's all very flat-looking.
Yeah, it does not look like there's much deck space. It is not a... I guess just because people end up showing carriers now that have the planes on them.
Right.
For the ships. It's either that or... Oh, my God. How could I forget Battleship? Just because they did actually somewhat explain, because I am quite ignorant of the different classes of ships.
Yes. So usually the destroyers are the smaller ships. Now this, they did say, is the largest destroyer that they have in the Navy now. But it has half the crew of other ships.
Right.
So no word if there's a robot crew involved in some of the day-to-day tasks here. But I'm guessing it's just that the ship is maybe more efficient with how it is put together and able to be manned with a fewer, a smaller crew. Similar to a starship, I guess.
Yeah, it was, I believe, 147 people was the number I feel like I seem to remember for what the crew was.
And the thing is 610 feet long, which is not too small, really.
Yeah, it goes up to 30 knots.
That's, what are we talking, 2 football fields? Yeah.
What, 610 feet long? Yeah, something in that neighborhood.
Yeah, so that's you wouldn't want to try to back that into your driveway.
No, you wouldn't.
But, and it seems to have some, no, I don't believe it has any phasers or photon torpedoes.
It does have 2 advanced gun systems with 155 millimeter rounds.
That's pretty big.
Yeah. And they have 80 missiles, and I believe that's what that is. It says cells total. 80 cells total. And MK-46 gun system.
They did say that
And they're mounted on the rear. You can see it right there.
They did say that the bridge has, wall-to-wall TV screens with cameras and things to keep the captain updated. So I guess it does seem to be a little bit like that they were trying to make it like a joke here.
It is very futuristic, because that was the other thing that it was in the original article, and I'm not surprised. I believe it cost $4.4 billion.
Yes.
And they were supposed to have a fleet of them and only ended up making 3 of them. Because it was a little bit expensive.
And I think it sounded like the people were worried about putting too many eggs in one basket here. At least that's my understanding of what this quote was here.
I mean, it was pretty paltry on the reasoning here. I've got to admit, there could be more information out there that we're not aware of all the comings and goings as to why this is not in production.
But this person, was a report from the House Armed Service Committee said that they thought the ships were built with, quote, too much capability into a single platform, unquote. Meaning, I guess, that it can just do too much, maybe? I'm thinking of, a restaurant on Hell's Kitchen that Gordon Ramsay might come in and just tear into because their menu is too complicated.
Yeah,
you need to be able to concentrate on doing something great.
Certain number of things.
Yeah, and you can maybe disagree with some of that. The Cheesecake Factory seems to be doing okay for themselves.
Having a
completely ridiculous menu.
Yeah,
but it sometimes it works for some people, I guess. But I can see that criticism. If there's just kind of too much going on.
Yeah, I'll admit I have not been to the Cheesecake Factory in sufficiently long enough time. I believe it's been well over a decade that I've gone to one.
I feel like once you've been there, you realize that they have their menu is ridiculous.
Yeah, I did catch the drift of that part, because it was actually that I went with my ex-wife. And I believe it might have even been our first Christmas together. Because I was leaving her for our first Christmas.
Happy memories.
Yep.
Well, I don't know. It probably took you a while to figure out what you wanted from the menu that day. I'm guessing.
Yeah. Also, the day that I realized that she was the one that's poisoning me with shellfish. So.
She was poisoning you with shellfish?
Yeah, she made me allergic to shellfish.
How did she do that?
Because she made me order it at the Cheesecake Factory. The Cheesecake Factory is partly to blame here.
So this sounds like a shadowy conspiracy.
Yep.
At this point.
To make Kevin allergic to shellfish.
Well, that was just...
It's a terrible conspiracy.
It doesn't sound like they were thinking of you. I think they were being a little shellfish.
He went there.
I will go there. I will go there. That's what I gotta say. I'm not afraid to admit it. This article was just funny because of the guy's name, James A. Kirk. Come on. And then he's seriously going to be a captain in the Navy? Come on.
Yeah, because, I mean, he could have been in... I don't know if there's captains in... Because there are captains in the Army, correct? Oh, and they have them in the Air Force, too. I think there are captains in pretty much every...
It's true.
I was trying to, because some ranks are only exclusive to certain branches of the military. Yeah, I feel like captain exists in all of them,
though. I don't think they have, like, general in the Marines or something. I think the corporal is the highest, or not corporal, colonel is the highest you can go in the Marines. But, yeah, I'm not sure. I think you're right. Like, there's some that have different rankings. But, just being the captain of a ship, I think. A ship captain is kind of like part of what makes this a funny story to me.
Definitely. Because, like, captain would be kind of funny, but...
If he was, like, the captain of a hockey team, that'd be one thing. But to be captain of...
I was even just going to say, like, I don't know if they have captains run a tank or anything like that. But, like, you know, you think of it as the, you know, Starship Enterprise. Like, you think of it as a ship. So, I mean, it's the mode of transportation is also part of the hook to me. Like, if he was the captain of an airplane.
The captain hook, as you're saying?
Well, I guess the airplane would kind of work, too. Well, since it's a bit of a spaceship.
It's a, I don't know. It's not going to be as big, though, as what I would consider, like, the Enterprise to be. Like, that's a big-ass ship.
Right.
And you just, there's not, unless you're Nick Fury, like, I feel like, your airplanes are not that big, for the most part. So.
The Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. getting called out by Ken Phillips for having big ships.
Yeah, it's true. But if they would never, I don't think, have a Captain Kirk flying that flying aircraft carrier thing.
Oh, we can only hope, sir.
Someday,
we can,
maybe.
We can only hope.
You know? But if you did that, I guess I'm saying people would be, like, probably taken out of it a little bit and thinking, like, come on, this can't really be something that actually happens. And then... Life turns around and does something that you would think would be too ridiculous to have in a comic book. And there's actually a Captain Kirk flying, or not flying, but sailing a futuristic ship. Now, if they'd actually named the ship the Enterprise, that would probably be taking things a little too far.
Right. I would imagine there probably is an Enterprise out there in the fleet somewhere.
Yeah, and if someone really had a sense of humor, they might... transfer this Captain Kirk to the Enterprise. Yeah. Well, I wonder if he would refuse that.
Captain Kirk reporting to the USS Enterprise. It just seems like we need Steve Guttenberg here to somewhat reprise his role in Police Academy, gone to the military.
Wait, they went into the military in one of those?
No, I'm just saying that was the first guy who came to mind for some reason. Like, that level of comedy, I'm going with...
You need a Steve Guttenberg for that kind of role, is what you're saying.
Yeah, yeah. Because I've got to admit, I'm not as familiar with... trying to think of what the one with Bill Murray is.
Stripes?
Oh, Stripes, yes.
Okay.
I'm not as familiar with that movie, I've got to admit.
When you were talking Steve Guttenberg, I was thinking of Short Circuit for some reason. That was also a military related movie.
Yeah, that was futuristic robot for the military, though.
Yeah. Do you remember the Indian scientist in that movie?
No, I do not. I do not remember that movie very well.
He was actually not Indian. I found out recently.
Oh. Was he supposed to be the dot-dot kind or the woo-woo kind?
Well, he was from India, so yes. He had, like, the stereotypical Indian accent and everything. But he was a white guy. I had no idea.
Oh. Oh, man.
Pretty crazy. Back in the 80s, man.
What you could get away with, kids.
Although, wasn't Mike Myers an Indian guy in a movie? Fairly recently?
I feel like it, yeah.
So maybe, who knows? We're not really that involved, I think. But,
yeah. In some situations, we are.
We are involved when it comes to warships. And I think there's a reason for that, Kevin.
You know, it is kind of funny that there are some pessimists out there that think we are killing each other a lot these days. Mm. But the humankind is actually at a low point currently for murdering each other.
Oh, yeah. If you look at historically speaking.
Yes, historically speaking.
We're on the low end of things when it comes to...
Even though there is conflict, we have the least amount of conflict, you know, that humankind has ever seen. And it also leads back to an interesting factoid that, and I think they sensationalized the headlines a little bit, but humans are descended from murderous beasts, but civilization has tamed us, is the name of the article. But it does mention that a lot of species kill their own kind.
But it does seem that humans are more into it than a lot of other mammal species.
Yes, we were on the high end of the scale. We are swinging down lower on the scale, thankfully. We are not at the top of the list anymore.
Our murder rate is good for us, but not necessarily good if you were to consider, say, compared to killer whales, quote unquote. They said that killer whales are actually very unlikely to kill other whales, at least.
That was kind of interesting.
And I guess you think they have maybe a bit of a bad name then.
I guess they
didn't call them murdering whales. That would be different.
Oh, man.
That would be clearly inappropriate. Well, it depends how you define it, I guess. Would they be murderers for killing their own kind? Or just for killing people? Would that be considered murder?
I guess both.
Yeah, well, they would still not really live up to the name then, I guess.
No, but they might kill a lot of other fish.
They do. But I don't know if you would call that murdering. Murdering fish?
They're murdering clownfish, Ken.
Oh, now we're talking about clowns? Let's not get too scary here.
Yeah, I didn't even think about that.
murdering clownfish. That sounds terrible. I wouldn't want to see one of those. But anyway, the it is a little bit strange to think, you know, that human beings are among the most murderous of mammals.
That's
a lot of alliteration going on.
Yeah, I guess that was kind of an interesting to find out. And they were, but they did say that a lot of it's tough to test.
Yeah, I guess killer whales don't keep the best statistics.
Right, yeah. They, and we know so much about the ocean, you know. There's what, like, still 70% of the ocean that isn't explored or some crazy amount or like that.
Right. So
we just basically have the sonar from that area. We don't have a goddamn clue what's actually down there.
It's if I'm remembering correctly, if memory serves, they were kind of, this is like a meta study that they did. So they studied a bunch of other studies basically, and anything that was kind of tracking animal deaths, to be able to see how many of the animal deaths were caused by other animals of the same species. So that's how they were able to arrive at these figures, to get the quote-unquote murder rates for other mammals. So there's, I guess, a chance that some of these studies are off.
Because they were saying that the closer primate cousins to us were, and this is what they boiled it down to, is 20 of 1,000 deaths in closer primate cousins, 20 of them were through self-violence previously. And they, oh my God. Okay. I don't know why. Maybe just because I read this article a while ago. I forgot about that. But that was what our early violence was. But between 700 to 1500 AD, the rate shot up to 120 per 1,000 people. Or 1,000 deaths were from, you know, someone else killing somebody.
Yeah, so that's...
And now our rate is down to 13 in 1,000.
So we're actually doing better now than, say, chimpanzees.
Right.
Which is good when you consider how violent chimpanzees can be.
Yeah, you don't... man, I've seen a couple of those videos where chimpanzees get a little crazy killing something, and that's just... it's disturbing.
Right. So we're... we're not ripping things apart with our bare hands, so that's nice. Usually, I guess. And, you know, we can live together in cities without... or, I think... I always remember a quote that somebody said, you know, basically pointing out how good people have become at living together compared to chimpanzees.
Oh.
That, you know, you can put a plane full of people together and... take off from London and they'll land in New York and everybody gets out. But if you did that with chimpanzees, like maybe one or two would come out.
So last man standing.
If you pack that many chimpanzees in a small space like that. So that's something to think about next time you're traveling in a plane. Is that
feel superior to a chimpanzee?
Is that annoyance you're feeling, the annoyance that you're sure to be feeling in airplane travel, being packed in with all those people, just be glad you're not a chimpanzee, because things will get a lot worse. But yeah, so we're doing better these days, but still, I think compared to other mammals that they were able to study, we really shouldn't be patting ourselves on the back necessarily too much.
Well, yeah, because that was funny. You mentioned the killer whales, and they said that there were zero.
The whales did not report any, as we said, murders.
Yeah.
Hence the killer whale versus murdering whale.
And it was at least a little bit interesting that they mentioned... humans are far less violent than the cougar, certain baboons, lemurs, and chinchillas. Like, the fact that chinchillas got thrown in there was kind of weird to me.
They have murder rates of over 100 per 1,000. So that's like medieval levels there.
Yeah, just about. That is pretty hardcore.
It's intense. Yeah, you wouldn't think that chinchillas, I mean, their fur is so soft.
And they just look freaking like...
murderous.
They just look like giant mice, man. Like, you don't think of mice as particularly violent.
No, I guess not. They're not listed among them either.
And I feel like... oh, no. Those aren't chinchillas that they have.
Certain baboons. I wonder which baboons are... That seems
I hope it's ominous. I hope it's the red-assed baboons.
That those are the really ones you got to watch out for?
Yeah.
Well, that would be handy because you could pretty much see them. Well, no, you couldn't. You could see them going. You wouldn't necessarily see them coming. That's not the warning you want, I guess.
Oh, man.
But certain baboons are the ones to look out for, it says. Also lemurs. Is weird.
Yeah, lemurs go back to a little bit weird. Cougar, you're like, well, of course. Like,
I think lions I could see killing, or, you know, any kind of cat feline species, I think I could see killing each other. Or I guess rats. Don't the rats kill each other sometimes?
Yeah, well, they didn't mention them, and are rats mammals? I have no idea what the... Okay. Yeah, I guess it is.
A mammal would be live birth. And I think milk is another one. So the we can check off those boxes there, I believe, for rats. So yeah, it does seem like over time we have become more civilized, more tame in a way, less violent.
Yeah, so, I mean, that's good. We have our peacocking showing of military might through the Chinese, and now we're going to wrap it up with, hey, we're actually getting less violent, even despite, real cloaking device level shit on the way.
Right. I think it just is maybe so, of course, people are always free to be illogical. But I think we're at the point now where wars kind of are so disruptive, it's like not really doesn't make any economic sense, I guess. We're all kind of tied together in some ways. So it's just better to kind of work things out as best you can without resorting to that sort of thing. Unless you're like ISIS, where you're completely insane. But, you have people like that too, I guess.
Again, if we're at low rates, then they still aren't doing that much work. Like, not that it helps anyone that's felt that tragedy, but
yeah, I guess it is something to be for the rest of us to be thankful for. And
everybody, you should be thankful for this episode. I mean, we talked about the Bell Time beer already.
7.7.
Yep, 77.7 or 7.77 alcohol, 77 IBUs. This is OPA number 77. And probably for more, for the 77th time, I am going to sign off. Good night, grandkids.
Good night.